thank you all for allowing me to be here with you again. This is exciting for me. Don't tell Dr. Patterson I said this, but I've been really excited about today. We have two guests with us, and Coach Ryan Miller is going to speak with you in just a moment, but I want to tell you a little bit about both of them before that. I'm really excited to share with you that Ernie Kuiper, who is the men's basketball's first general manager at Murray State University, brought in because of his vast experience with NIL and the recruitment landscape and all of those things that have evolved in college basketball over the last several years. He's somebody that has a lot of experience and knowledge in that, and so they created this position, and Ernie Kuiper is in that role. And he and his wife, Carly, have moved to Trigg County, Kentucky. So they have a house on Lake Barkley, not far from us, and so we're really excited to welcome them to the community, and I was looking forward to introducing all of you to him today and give him a nice welcome so that you can get to know he and Carly as well. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. Also with us, our guest of honor today is Coach Ryan Miller, Murray State University's men's basketball coach. He comes to our program with a national reputation as one of the country's premier recruiters and a proven winner at programs including Creighton, TCU, Auburn, and UNLV. He's also served as an assistant coach at New Mexico, Pepperdine, and Memphis. He has coached in 8 NCAA tournaments, helped teams win 5 regular season championships, and developed numerous NBA standouts such as Desmond Bain and Derrick Jones and Baylor Shireman. Thank you. That was one I didn't know. Christian Wood and Patrick McGraw. Most recently at Creighton, Coach Miller helped guide the Blue Jays to 4 straight NCAA tournament appearances, which is amazing, including trips to the Elite 8 and 2 Sweet 16s, while coordinating one of the nation's top offenses and landing multiple top 15 recruiting classes. He's a former Division II All-American, longtime collegiate basketball coach, brings with him not only an elite basketball mind, but also a lifelong commitment to player development, which I'm excited for him to talk to you about today, too. It's very important to the program that we develop the entire player, not just the athlete. Coach Miller attended Northern State, where he was a 2-time Northern Sun All-Conference selection and finished his career 8th in Northern State's all-time scoring list after leading his team to 4 straight league championships and the 1998 regional title. He earned his bachelor's degree in physical education from Northern State in 2000. He and his wife, Marna, have 2 daughters, Malia and Hallie. And then you might know Coach Miller's brother, Mike, played 17 years in the NBA, was named NBA Rookie of the Year in 2001, and the NBA Sixth Man of the Year in 2006. And so this is a basketball family with a lineage going back quite a ways. Before I introduce Coach Miller, I did want to share something just briefly with the two of you. Have you ever heard of something called the Baby Racers? Do you know what the Baby Racers are?
No.
So back in the day, 2 of the gentlemen in this room played football at Murray State University, and they also, as freshmen at Murray State, were on what they called at the time the Baby Racers basketball team. So you've got 2 basketball alumni in here as well. So with that, I'd like to introduce Coach Ryan Miller.
What I'll do is I'll have a prepared statement, and I'll just kind of open it up to questions. I'm sure the Q&A is always the best, and I love the Q&A because, and you can put me on the hot seat too. So if you have things you don't like that you see from us, please let me know. Thanks again, Kerry, for that great introduction. Telling me again how old I am. I mean, now you went through my whole deal. It's 22 years as assistant, and brought me here. So thank you for the introduction. Good afternoon, people. The Rotary Club of Katy's. It's an honor to be here. Thank you for everything you've done for Murray State University. You continue to do for Murray State University. The people of Western Kentucky and the tremendous support of Racer Athletics, and particularly Racer Basketball. 9 months ago, I was the associate head coach of Creighton, a perennial top 25 basketball program, working for one of the best basketball minds in the country in Coach Greg McDermott. So it took a really truly special place for me to leave. I was close to home. Sioux Falls, South Dakota, my parents live. So I had a lot of family in the region. So it took a really special place for me to go to. And Murray State is that place. It's because of its history of championships. It's because of its great players and coaches that followed me. It's because of its current leadership from A.D. Nikolayenko, President Dr. Patterson, and, of course, all the alumni and all the fans of Racer Basketball. I feel incredibly fortunate to be the caretaker of this storied basketball program. Western Kentucky has welcomed my family like we've been here forever. I come from a small town of Mitchell, South Dakota, a town of 13,000 people. A region of an area of the country this place reminds me so much of home. There's hardworking people here, faith-filled people, family-first people who value education, and above all, live Racer basketball. For 22 years, I was an assistant basketball coach, like Harry said. From Memphis with Coach Calipari, don't hold it against me, please, to my last four seasons with Coach McDermott at Creighton. Everywhere I went, where everybody came up, if Murray State ever calls, I say, you have to go. And it's because of the history here, but everybody says the same thing. It's the people here, the people here. You're going to enjoy the people, from Mick Cronin, who I talked to Coach Prohm. From everybody says the same thing. The people, the region, truly make it special. When we get the job, we selectively brought in 50 new basketball players. Someone told me today that I did not know. We're one of nine programs that brought in 50 new players from all over the world. So we had a lot to do, a lot of work cut out for us to mold this into a basketball team. From day one, we told them our program is built on three things. It's unselfishness, care for the people around you. Make sure the guy next to you is having, we go from good to great passes and he has a really good experience. Competitiveness, compete for every play, every down, every time that ball goes up. There we're competing to win that possession. And toughness, both mental and physical. The mental side, being able to deal with adversity, and obviously the physical side, being in great physical shape and being able to take on our opponents. And if we brought those three things, we will be able to compete and hopefully win championships. And that's the ultimate goal here, to compete and win championships like they have done in the past here. But not only we're going to try to win championships on the court, we're going to try to win championships in the classroom. We're going to graduate our young men. They're going to be pillars of the community, and they're going to be great peers on campus. So far, the season's going pretty good. The most thing I'm proud of is what we've been able to accomplish by taking these 15 individuals and being able to make a team. We're 7-3. I had some heartbreaking defeats in Cayman Islands, but through that adversity, we've averaged 88 points a game, which is top 35 in the country. And number one in the Missouri Valley Conference. We just picked up back-to-back home wins versus Morehead State and Bellarmine. We knocked off George Washington, a top 60 team ranked nationally, on a buzzer beater. And it's also the number one win in the Missouri Valley Conference to date, and it probably will finish that way. Unless we beat Akron on Saturday, then that will be the top win in the Missouri Valley Conference. So, but what I'm most proud of, like I said, is we brought these 15 guys, and they're from all over the world. I mean, we got Fred King from Bahamas, Matisse Corbon and Ramon Damone from France. We have Lachlan Cray from New Zealand. So they're truly all over the world. And we molded this team, and we have 15 guys that are contributing every night. And it's different guys contributing at a high level every single night. In this day and age of college basketball, when people are always complaining, hey, you can't build a team, I think we are the definition of a team. Mason Miller, who's my brother's son, he's currently one of the top three-point shooters in the college basketball. So we talk about development a little bit. He's shooting over 50% from three. Fred King and Kentucky native J.J. Trainer are both two of the best finishers in the country around the rim. Javon Jackson, who transferred to us from UIC, is a terrific three-level scorer who just hit the game-winning basket versus George Washington. And then we have all those freshmen and sophomores, and anybody can step up at any moment. So it's been truly incredible to be a coach of this team. But I'm not going to sit here in December and make a bunch of promises and bold predictions about wins and losses, but I will promise you this. Every night we come out, play. We'll play as hard as we possibly can. We'll do it with passion. We'll do it with purpose. And we'll do it with integrity. We'll represent Murray State basketball and university in this region the right way. And we'll leave every ounce of effort between those lines. Because that's what Racer basketball has always been about. It's been about toughness, it's been about together, and it's been about championships. Thank you for all you guys do. Thank you for the support of our program. And thank you for adopting a small-town kid from South Dakota and making Western Kentucky feel like home. I appreciate everything, and go Racers. So, any questions you got for me, shoot.
I've got a big one here. Mitchell, South Dakota. Home of the Corn Palace?
Home of the world's only Corn Palace. Yeah. It's basically, you probably were going to Mount Rushmore or something at the time, more than likely. Or pheasant hunting, so one of the two things. But that's where I played my high school basketball games, in the Corn Palace.
Oh, really?
In the Corn Palace?
Yeah, in the Corn Palace, yep. Yeah, but Dakota, small NAIA school, Dakota Wesleyan University, where my dad and my uncles played basketball at, and Ernie actually played there too. NAIA school out of Mitchell, South Dakota. Yeah.
If you ever go that way, you should stop and go.
Yeah. It's unique for sure.
Unique?
Yeah. They change it every year.
Yeah, they change, yep. Yeah. They change the outside murals or murals, they're changing them every year. And actually, my brother was on one of them a couple of years ago. I don't know when it was, but yeah.
You'll be up there next.
Yeah, if we win enough games, he'll be up there next.
Question. We have another team in the state that's pretty well known.
Yeah.
They're struggling right now, and you all are doing very well. And it's about team chemistry. How do you build that team chemistry? How do you get that team chemistry?
It's very challenging, obviously, especially for us, where we don't have, this year we have no culture because we're creating our own culture. So, we do a lot off the court. Without practice, we've had a lot of time up here at Katie's. We go up late days, bowling, and we also try to compete at everything we do. So just by spending a lot of time together, we did a retreat in Nashville, we did Fort Campbell retreat, obstacle courses. We try to take 4 years, what would be typical, 3-4 years, kid goes to college, and they go from freshman year, sophomore year, junior year, senior year, and we try to condense that experience into, 24 months, I think you do with, show them you care, put them in a family environment, and so they strive for each other's success and they feel like a basketball team. I think, are we completely there yet? No, but we're getting closer, and going through adversities. You have to go through that adversity together too. Like in Cayman Islands, we dropped 2 games and 1 game we just got smoked. And we were able to rebound the next night and deal with adversity. So going through those foxholes together and can really build trust, and building that trust, you build trust in each other, then you can, as a coach particularly, you can shuffle around your lineups a little bit because they trust you. And the players will make plays for each other because they trust each other. Because a big model for us is good to great. So that refers to offensive basketball. So if I have a good shot, but Ernie has a great shot, I want to make sure we get that great shot. But it has to happen both ways, right? So he has a good shot, has to score, me did a great shot, and build that trust takes a little bit of time, and that's ultimately what we're trying to do.
I just have to ask, were you guys childhood friends? Y'all grew up together?
We're cousins. So he graduated, my brother Mike, and then helped Mike, when Mike was drafted in 2000 NBA, as an NBA rookie, he went down to Orlando with Mike, and I kind of did too. I actually put my career on hold. I was in Australia playing basketball, actually. And Mike was 20 years old, and my parents thought he should have some family around him at that time, being a 20-year-old lottery pick. So with all the, success and failure, success can be somewhat, at that level, can be somewhat harder to deal with than failures. Because of all the distractions that come with success. So at that time, they thought it'd be good to have family around him. So Ernie and I were kind of the ones that helped him, be the conduit between home and going through and being a 20-year-old millionaire in Orlando, Florida,
Something solid.
Yeah, something solid. So I did that for 3-4 years. He grew up. I said, I'm getting to college basketball. So I started working with Coach Calipari in 2003. And then Ernie kind of helped him with his AAU programs and throughout growing up, and then when I got this job, he was the first guy I called because I knew he'd be really good at, he knew the grassroots scene as good as anybody. He's been in the grassroots scene for a long, long time, and we've both been kind of working together in this business for a long time, so need somebody to trust when I got the job, and he was the first guy I called.
I have a question. Just piggybacking on what you just said about 20-year-old millionaires getting into the NBA and having to deal with success and failure on that kind of a stage. Of course, Ja Morant, is our favorite son, and we've seen him publicly go through a lot of that.
Yep.
And, for those of us who actually,
we're around him and know yep. him, it's hard to watch because you know that there's a good kid in there that's going yeah. through a lot, you know? And so I guess my question is, when you see these kids that have this extreme talent and you know they're going to go somewhere, how do you help mold them to prepare them for that next step? Or do you? Or
can you, you do. Yeah. But I will say, that level of success is truly, really difficult to manage. Because mm-hmm. You're pulled so many different directions by so many different people and ways to try to get at you. So eventually most kids will go through, and you just hope they don't lose it all in the process, right? So hopefully they learn from their mistakes, get better from their mistakes. But unless you've been through it, and Mike didn't go through his level of job, but I've been around those guys. So unless you go through it and manage it and you keep your circle tight, it's very, very difficult. And he's just going through it, and he's going to have to learn from some of his mistakes he's made, and he's going to have to get better from it. And I think he will. I mean, like you said, you know, you always go down to your foundation. If you're a good person at your core level, you're going to go down to your foundation at some point. You know, success is – I see more people derailed by success than failure, really, because – especially when you call extreme success like that, because there's so many distractions that can happen from even family, you know. There's so many distractions that can happen that can take you the wrong direction. He just got to go back to his core values and core roots, which his character's high. I don't know him that well, but I know people that know him. And he's just got to get that which he has, and I think he'll rebound fine.
I think it says so much, your parents were brilliant. And I don't know, maybe that's yeah. something that happens a lot. I don't know. But to send somebody that's watching out for his best interest to be with him, with your brother, that's just brilliant.
I mean, yeah.
Because that's 90% of the time when you hear the stories, it's the suckers that attach.
Yeah, it can be outside influence. It can be a little bit of anything. It's just, you just got to be careful who you surround yourself, because those guys have big bullseyes. Like, you know, people... Normal successful people, they're not on TV all the time. They're not entertainers. They're not. So when people see that, they draw some bad people to that area of life. Because they know, okay, Ja's very successful, or whoever it is, not Ja or anybody. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, everybody knows that, hey, there's, even when Mike was in there, hey, there's Mike Miller going there. Let's try to get in with that group. You know, and some people can get in there, and then all heck breaks loose. You have to keep your circle tight. I mean, and you have to stay rooted to your foundation, which is your high. If you're a high character individual, you got to stay rooted to that. You can get torn away real quick.
Question.
Yeah.
When the NIL deal came, we have UK basketball tickets, and our season ticket package went up 40% overnight, and. With what's going on lately, I'm just curious how Murray State addresses, have your tickets gone up 40%, or how do y'all address whole NIL playing ground?
Yeah. Well, you know, first of all, it is the way it works now, obviously, NIL, rev share. A good friend of mine always uses the acronym, CEO, Change Equals Opportunity. So there is an opportunity to be had, and how you utilize it and how you manage it is different. Like Murray State, because we got great leadership from the athletic department, Nico Yanko, Dr. Patterson, the Board of Trustees, they understand the changing climate of athletics. They're understanding the different revenue sources, not necessarily season ticket packages where you try to raise your season ticket package with other revenue systems that could put you on a competitive advantage. I think if you ask them, our ultimate goal is to keep leveling up, and it's one reason why I am here, because when you take a job, I had a really good job at Creighton. I was the associate coach. I ran all the offense, but one of the best offense teams in the country. So it took a place that had to be like able to adapt to change. So I think leadership here is able to adapt to change and put us in a position where we compete. I'm not saying we can compete with Kentucky necessarily, but we can compete on a scale like the A-10 with the Daytons of the world, and that's ultimately what we want to try to do, and then try to level up from there. But they've done some things institutionally fundraising wise, to help us on a rev share with a rev share model that's very competitive at the higher end of the Missouri Valley Conference. And it will probably be allow us to attract some of the better players.
Do you have to worry about your players getting bought out after the end of the season?
Oh, yeah. We'll have a couple. Retention is a big key. We're going to want to keep our culture in place. So, but there'll be some kids like Roman Damone. They'll have, they could have some opportunities. And Matisse Colon, our younger kids that are, pretty good, pretty talented. There could be some. But we've already they will take, for stability and for what they know versus the unknown, we don't have to be the guys giving the most money. We just have to be competitive. Like, if, I don't know, the numbers are crazy, whatever. If the number is $700,000 for somebody, but we can provide a stable environment where they know where the coach and the culture is intact, for less than that, then we can't give them nothing, but we have to give them something to be able to compete with that. If we can do that, we'll be just fine. If we go to zero, we won't be fine. You know, if that makes sense? So if we get, the number, whatever the number is, just a competitive landscape, we don't have to be their number. We don't have to be their number. We just have to be a given number that's halfway competitive, because there is still value in for these kids. Everybody on media, they always talk, they're just going to jump for the next money dollar. They're not doing that. They will stay if they know the place has built on a strong foundation and the culture is built, and they know they're going to have a great opportunity. Opportunity and all that stuff still matters. Like, Ramon could go, let's say, after the year, because he's one of the guys that he's talented enough to play about anywhere in the country. I don't know if he'll get there. I mean, it's our job in development to try to get him there, but he's talented enough to do it. He will stay here as long as we have opportunity in place and we have a good development plan in place and we have a competitive, not to be the highest, competitive landscape out for him. So there's still a lot of value to that.
I'm curious. How do you balance coaching the team you have right now and the whole recruitment piece, especially when you're recruiting from all around the world?
It can be tricky sometimes, but actually, it was harder, to be honest with you, the old days when it was just like normal, because you really had to go in like sophomores and develop strong relationships. Now you still have to develop strong relationships, but there's also a business component to it, so it's actually in some ways, you don't want to say easier, but it's not. You would have to, back in the old days, no one's recruiting high school kids really, because it's hard. We still will, but not. We can't have a whole team of them, else you're gonna get blitzed. That was biggest Cal's biggest mistake over at Kentucky, in my opinion, that he kept on, even though they're the best high school players in the country. But you had to start over high school kids every single year. Mm-hmm. The kids we have right now, our big guys are like Fred King, who I coached for 3 years at Creighton already. Mason Miller, who I coached at 4 years at Creighton already. Ben Schultzberg, he's sitting out this year, but he gives us a lot of culture and a lot of leadership. He was at UC Santa Barbara and he was at Creighton already. Javon Jackson played at UIC and Utah State. Like, those guys have been through some of these battles. Now my job is trying to get these formed into a team, but they've been through a lot of battles and wars already versus freshmen. They have a lot of growing up to do, Like Bob Knight said, the best thing about freshmen, they become sophomores. They have a lot of growing up to do. I mean, they're kids, right? And so, when I play our kids, which is our younger kids, when they come off the bench, they look very, very spectacular sometimes. And the highs and lows are really high, and the lows are really, really low. So that's what you have to do with young kids. So, there's just not recruiting those young kids as much. You're more recruiting portal relationships that we had prior. So in some ways, it's not as time consuming. It's harder maybe, but not as time consuming. Back in the old days, it was very, very time consuming.
So do you think the NIL money has changed the team dynamics? And how does that, are these kids playing for themselves or are they playing for a team?
I would like to think our team is playing for our team and what's in front of the jersey. That's what we're trying to build every day. There are some places where it's probably, you don't want to mention names, but I could probably pick them out. I mean, they're probably playing for the name on the back of the jersey and what they could do with NIL money and all that stuff. Teams that are underperforming a little bit. I like to think our money here at our level is obviously very good. But it's not like not like mind-boggling, cloud the mind good, if that makes any sense. They have bigger issues like places like Kentucky when it's like, they're dealing with seven-figure numbers and, you know, more money, more problems.
Did you see Calipari's quote this week about the...
Yeah, the beards and stuff?
Yeah, beard and paying.
The alimony, yeah.
Alimony, that's great.
My question is kind of on the same line, because we've been exposed to someone in athletics at the college level, yeah, and kind of, and hearing tales about some of the kids that have got pretty good money. And what are you doing with your kids to try to let, give them
advice,
information about how to use the money appropriately? Because we've heard tales of like kids would go out and spend the money before they even got it in their pocket, and not, it seemed like to us, and that they weren't even considering that they had to pay taxes with that money. And so I guess my concern all along has been kind of like, what are these programs doing so these kids do not take that money and blow it?
Yeah.
And then, you know, they're not all going to the, the big time.
No, there's
so
something,
in some capacity.
In some capacity, this will be the most money any of these kids make in their whole entire life.
Right.
And for a large swath of them, it will be. Money management classes, bringing in tax accountants. We haven't quite done that here yet, but that's what we did at Creighton, and then eventually we'll get to here. There's a big, for us, since we have four international players, there's a big international tax component that we have to continue to educate our players about. How they get taxed, when they get taxed, which government's taking their money. Whether it's Uncle Sam or, you know, whoever's in France, whatever it is. Someone's taking their money.
Yeah. Dad, did you have a question?
If you were in charge for the day and to make any changes you want, how would you change NIL and the portal?
The NIL is probably, so what? What happened basically, like you had amateur athletics, right, which was amateur athletics, NCAA. But what happened about 10 years ago, the content became so expensive, like Amazon Prime, ESPN, they all bid up this content, whether it's football or basketball. And they bid it up and those became $300, $400 million contracts that were signed with the Big 12 or SEC. So the lawyer, once that happened, amateurism was off. That's when the lawyers came in. And the lawyers said, you ain't signing a $500 million contract, and these kids aren't partaking in this. It's not happening. So then they had the lawsuits, right? So NIL and rev share is probably something that's needed, in my opinion, because it's particularly more in the lines of football, because a lot of these guys, if they don't make the NFL, their bodies are kind of dinged up already. And you play the SEC, or you play these high-impact games where there's money generated in an SEC football game, because I coached that place, I coached at Auburn. They're making, the community and the whole place, probably making $15 to $20 million of economic growth that weekend, that Saturday weekend. So it's good for those guys to partake in it. The problem is, you have the transfer portal at the same time, so now you have single-year free agency, and you have large groups of people that have a lot of money, so you have no stability. Like NBA, NFL has more stability because they can lock their players up in four-year contracts. We have them for year to year, so you put this large amount of money, and at the same time, you basically have a seven-month contract with the individual, and then you have, they're represented by whoever, or even if their parents are doing it, and someone says, hey, I can get you $750,000 Auburn, so you have this single-year free agency problem that you're dealing with every single year with the 15 players, unless you graduate some players, so. We have 10 players that can potentially enter the portal after 1 year, and we can't do nothing about it. And so that's what needs to be fixed. The transfer portal problem needs to be fixed. That will solve a lot of problems. And whether it's buyouts, I don't know what it looks like, but it just, the current format is not sustainable because, I mean, your kid, you know, you have a kid, let's say, he's a men's basketball player, he's making $250,000, and someone tells you can make 1.2 at Kentucky, you know, probably saying, hey, you might not make that money like that the rest of your life. You better take a good hard look at it, you know, what, no matter what situation you're in. So that single-year free agency deal is the issue that needs to be fixed.
Thank you.
Yeah, but I've heard when some of these players I've talked about have been like four different schools.
Yeah.
4 years.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking as a coach, how do you cope with building a new team every year?
That's the biggest, probably the biggest challenge you got, you know, try to build a team. You know, it used to be the old days, you go recruit a kid, he's a freshman, he plays a little bit, didn't play a little bit, whatever. He becomes a sophomore, he becomes more part of the program. You know, his junior year is a starter, senior year he might be all conference. Those days, out the window, right? Kids are out the window. So how do you build your team? It becomes, you know, like we have to be in a competitive NIL landscape, rep share landscape, but we also have to build team and culture and what we do here. And the guys that can figure that formula out will be will succeed. The guys that can't, like, they'll be.
I think, we probably have time for one more question.
Yeah. Right.
You're good? Okay.
I'm good.
Jim will always have more people.
Okay.
I've had my questions about the NCAA down through time.
Yeah.
I've been an old coach viewing it from very amateur level, but where does the NCAA fit into all this?
I mean, unfortunately, they lost every court case possible, so they have no teeth. It's not their fault. They're trying to have teeth, but they have no teeth because when it goes to court, the courts always rule in favor for the plaintiff. You know, they just get ruled against every single time on antitrust, all that stuff. So. Eventually, what's got to happen there is going to be what I just saw pop up on my phone, actually, an ESPN article. I didn't read it because it happened just right now. They're talking about collective bargaining agreement. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that has to happen. There has to be some sort of collective bargaining agreement within the institutions or the conferences or with the athletes, or federal government has to intervene and put federal laws in place. Those are one of two things that's going to happen in the next 5 years. I don't know exactly what will happen, but either it's going to be federal laws, restricting salary cap in some capacity, or a collective bargaining agreement, not so, you know, kind of like how you see NBA or NFL. Actually, how the rev share was put together with the $20 million rev share that you hear about was actually modeled after the NBA CBA. Because the NBA CBA, they share 50% of the revenue with the owners and 50% with the players. They put a value, they took the top five, Power Five programs. They said your program's worth basically $100 million a year. They split it in two to about $50 million, and then they put like $30 million in additional benefits that the player would get, and that's where they came up with the $20.5 million when they put it together. That you see was modeled after the CBA, 50-50 rev share. The answer is, it's not going to be fixed until government intervention or there's some sort of collective bargaining agreement, and that will happen sometime in the next 5 to 10 years probably.
Got a question on the end of the year.
You can keep going. I'm not in a hurry.
You know, I'm a fix the transfer portal kind of guy too, so that answers the first one. The second one is, as a father of three boys, there's competition at my house all the time. I want a one-on-one series with you and Mike.
I'll tell you, that's good acting. So I was going junior senior year of college, so he was going junior senior year of high school, and Mike was starting to go through the rankings like, he ended up top five in the country in high school. And I was, going junior and senior, I was like an All-American Division II player. Not a good player, not a great player, obviously. I'm in her driveway in her summertime, because back then you didn't stay at your school and go summer workouts like we do now. Like now it's 12 months of the year we work our guys. So I'm back and Mike comes home from like hanging out with his buddies. It's like 10 o'clock at night and I'm on the driveway shooting whatever. And he goes, hey, you want to play one-on-one? He's like in a pair of Doc Martin boots and some jeans. So he's a junior and a senior in high school. I'm junior and a senior in college. And I'm out there working. I'm like, okay, I'll play one. I remember beating him. But it took like everything I had. I'm 4 years older and like mature senior in college, Division II All-American. It took everything I had. And I remember going and talking to my dad. He goes, man. That kid here is right there. He's going to be special. I don't know how good, but he's been really good. Well, ended up being the fifth pick of the draft, and I never played him again. So like, yeah, you're the one that never played him again. Want to play one? Nah, my legs will. We're good. Exactly. So he would kick my butt after that, so I knew better. I beat him the last time he played. You got anything else? I appreciate you guys having me. I appreciate all your work you guys do in the communities and around here for us at Murray State basketball. Thanks for having me. Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Thank you.